an island off the west coast of Scotland called Lindisfarne. It's also called the Holy Isle, and it's kind of like it traces it's like a kind of bit from the Holy, being called the Holy Isle, all the way back to the Neolithic. But in the 17th century, with the rise of Calvinism in Scotland, loads of lads went over there and they knocked all the Neolithic stuff out of the standing stones and whatever, and threw it in the sea. Auchenstein. They knocked the stones of the Grey Wolf Witch, with 20 of the faithful, that new young priest, had it thrown in the ditch. That same young priest who called me out in the church and the people shunned me, he wouldn't buy my healing herbs. And the old stone recumbent in the ditch where it lay called out its own hymn. And 'twas on the Wednesday forenoon after the fair when the young priest on horseback came a cantering there. His white mare, she shied him, and he tumbled on down with a sharp crack as his neck broke. That priest met his doom. Then the people called to me to barter and trade, and 20 of the faithful put the stone back in its place.
Hey, Grab. Next we have Adam Wyatt.
Okay. I'm still on the phone, but I can't find out. I'll find you in a minute.
Yeah. No, you can't. Sorry. Next up we have Bernadette McCarthy.
This is actually kind of following on from Rab's poem and theme. About the Aran Islands, which have a very romantic landscape in which many monuments survive, and they're often typecast by writers and academics as truly Celtic, but now doing fieldwork I found out it wasn't that straightforward. Farewell to Aran. I know you, Aran, but imperfectly, as clint to greig, as land to sea, as a fulmar knows the edges in between wing and sky. For you twist away from my pilgrim prayers in a kidney clutch, yet I can smell the bronze tang of time that keens your breath. And over your breast and nothingness, the giddy dune runs chapeau de frise, far from the cursor's blink at the foot of the page. I've seen a fish caught in a saxifrage net at the bed of a holy spring. Through the lace of a dry stone gap, I have pulled 12 pins. I have measured a limestone hut and reeled off sing. But I cannot grasp what lies beneath the church of the crippled ridge, at the cusp of a crinoid's arm, in the cup of an iron man's head.
Adam Wyatt.
So I couldn't find what I was looking for, and I still can't, but I found this. It's an unpublished piece. Would you like me to read a poem? Very well then. I thought I'd choose this one. It's a bit long, but I think it somewhat explores the symbolism we discussed earlier. The first line never fails to hook me in. In fact, the entire opening section is, I'm sure you'll agree, to die for, so to speak. There's a bit of an obscure word after that, which we won't go into here. Suffice to say, the speaker is referring to his, her, mother, and or sister, perhaps. Lest we forget, it was after this middle period that the poet relapsed into brutal silence. The second section reminds me of a song Aunt Nora used to sing as a boy, the exact words of which escape me. But it's the final anti-heroic couplet that comes across as the most accomplished, reaching dizzying heights. The puzzling way the measure of the lines seem to inevitably come together and mirror the matter. The way the groundswell of vowels works with and against the imaginative flights of fancy. Its indefatigable pursuit of the sublime and meditations on time are unparalleled. The language being at once astringent and ravishing, complete like a nucleus, an organism or orgasm, you might say. But perhaps more striking than anything is its audacity to throw down the gauntlet, while at the same time refuse to give away itself entirely. Its determination not to lie down and be buggered, to coin a phrase, not to mention the ambivalence of the denouement that lies at its centre like a scantily clad Mediterranean girl turning away, unbeknowingly exposing the penumbra of her behind, which in the end perhaps is its most enduring trait. I should point out that some critics consider its tone naive and whimsical, and have indicated that the syncopated rhythm out of the shifting accents reflects the theme of arrested development of the speaker, and so on, etc. But I'll leave that for you to determine. Anyway, if you're quite ready, I'll begin.
I'm glad you lost the other one. Thanks, Adam. Next we have Billy Ramsell.
This is something I've been put together recently as part of a collaboration I was working on or with. And it's called The Top 10 Things No Longer There After Clovis Mullman. That's about as amusing as it gets, actually. Number 10. The banjos know they're skinned with dust in the Department of Silences. 9. The disputation from every shuttered pub. Number 8. Your clean cedar hinting scent. Now every meridian has slackened, and the time zones between us put on centuries each hour. Number 7. In their plus fours and ridiculous kerchiefs, they melted down the statue of the physicist in the square. Number 6. The fuchsia they took to burning in piles, with the blackberries and those little blue flowers no one ever really knew the name of. Number 5. The one optimistic kiss I settled on your belly after that after party in Rose's place. Number 4. With their nightsticks and tacky insignia, they confiscate recollection. Requisition kisses and Christmases for their database of wind. Number 3. I can't find that beautiful thing you asked me for. I can't find my memory of making it. Number 2. What's missing? What's conspicuous by its absence from the main square and its tributaries? The future perfect or the future continuous? Number 1. Poor deleted Tarragona, our city of bonfires, our city of casual drug use and vinyl that's been consigned to the archive of snow.
Bar is hard to high tonight. Crikey, good luck to anyone who has to follow all those poets. Next up we have Kian Austin Jesus Kinsella.
Hey, well, that's great, yeah. I'll just follow all that. Thanks. Okay, I'd like to remember it, but I worry about my memory. If time had a reason, it would be rhyme. If reason had a time, reason I'm going to start again. Thanks. If time had a reason, would it be rhyme? If reason had a rhyme, would it be time? There's no time to tell, to rhyme so well. No season for reason, too fine to tell. To tell the tale of a whale who did sail on a ship full of treason that was all out of reason. I'm all up for pleasing if pleasing's in season. But it's time we will tell if pleasing has reason or rhyme is reason enough.
Hey!
Reason enough for me. Patricia Walsh, next please.
Just to recap from last week, the twins get brained off when they go to the local bookstore, when they find out it's a front row porn cinema. And this is what's the point now before I start. The AVN Awards are the porn world's answer to the Oscars. The boys were like children in a sweet shop as they picked out a DVD called Balls of Steel. Hey ho, let's go! The film trundled on past the credits towards something resembling applause and some substantial action per square inch. Not much of a plot, eh? Does it matter or does it have what quite an action? What reward do you want? They reclined in their tiny armchairs and intent on making an evening of it. Even if it disappeared for the whole weekend, it was money and time well spent. No detail went past them. Hang on a second. What? Just a minute or 2 seconds. Why? Just do it. Paul did as he was told. Look at him, eh? Look familiar? My God, it looks like Barry. Oh my God, it is him. I know that big hair anyway. Why would you get into that? But no, he's not generally well hung, but he seems good all rounder. All that grooming, investing a chest pass is a good move. And I've mentioned the baby oil body. Michael Flatley eat your heart out. And he's not as weighted there as he is now. Paul looked at the DVD cover. Yeah, it says here that they got shortlisted from the best newcomer at the AVN Awards that year, you see. The twins could not keep quiet about the discovery, but today to the credit, he now wants to cause undue pain and suffering. However, the temptation to call Barry about his porn career during the private cigarette sub-break was too much. Needless to say, Barry was not happy going with the news. Where the hell did you find out about that? Not the local bookstore. Never mind that. How did you get that porn act anyway? Ah, long story. I took a year out of college to travel. My money got stolen when I was in Canada. Then I met this girl who told me how to make a lot of money, and she blackmailed me and took advantage of me and told me I stole my passport. I couldn't get out of the country fast enough. Is porn in Canada? Oh yes, there's a demand for it. Don't you think it's strange that in Ireland we don't have a porn industry? In this day and age, we should be rising foreign imports. People need jobs after all. Hey, that's what you can do. Guaranteed Irish. Well, what do you think of the I think I leave it there.
Patricia will be taking auditions. Right, next up we have Matthew Moynihan.
Hate to follow that, really. So the first is a short poem called Corklock. An oval of life absorbing the sun, the flora, the fauna, all living as one. The swans that sail on its radiant ripples, the men in the hawthorn enjoying their tipples. As I sit and I stare at this beacon of life, my fears and my worries are cut by a knife. I'll sail on the waters as if I'm a swan, and soak in the sun till my worries are gone. And the second one is actually a short poem about a Vipassana retreat that I did 2 months ago. So if you don't know what a Vipassana retreat is, it's basically you live like a monk for 10 days, celibate. I'm not very sure that the monks would be very interested, but I'll try and persuade them. So basically, I came across two horses one morning as the sun was rising, and they represent how I felt when I went into the retreat and how I felt when I left. So it's called Two Horses at Dawn. I strolled along this wayward course examining my past, when all at once up popped a horse, another rising fast. They gazed at me like organ keys, one black, another white. I stared into their souls with ease, without even a fight. The black horse stared and shook impure, a product of his past, his tremulous hooves beyond a cure, his troubles truly cast. The white horse peered and stood erect, his vista so serene, his branded hooves that did reflect a mind that's truly clean.
Thank you, Matthew. Well done. Next we have Mags Creda, just in the house.
This is a little poem about a bridge I love, and it's seen great sadness this summer, so I'll just do with this. Condwee. Rising softly from the well-burnished road, my shoulders carry them. Soft sandstone, stippled with crusty silver foil, mossy patching of alopecia tufts. Barley-covered grasses stem from my stays. Cromwell's hand has humped my back to ford my bubble browsing waters. The heron keeps his watch and the otter steals out in flood. And when times are silent, the little wiggly wagtail rocks and bobs salute. Sometimes my pretty legos growls hunger, reaches out her siren's call to seduce with a snatch. There beckoned my Ophelia, gentle flows her turning form. Pass beneath these arms of arches. Know the brave once bombed me down. Know the lights of Venice reflect hourly in summer festival in Marquis Town.
They bear your witness and light your path. And I will shelter little ducklings and cygnets, and I shall carry, and I will see, this Ponte d'Arce, spine-bent Condui.
Thank you, Max. We're just about halfway with the open mic now, I'd say. And next up, we have Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Paul. Spot all the doggy ponds in this. This actually was a news item about 4 years ago, and I thought I'd make something out of it. It's called A Bone of Contention. Dublin Airport, early morning, as the bags were being scanned, a bemused custom official came across some contraband. Not the usual drugs or ciggies. This was quite another tale. A chihuahua in a suitcase nearly caused his heart to fail. When he managed to recover, he got experts on the case. Could it just have been a toy dog in a temporary space? No. The creature was alive, and though it had a lengthy flight, where it sneaked past customs in Madrid and Sofia by night. Authorities at the airport started looking for a lead, tracked down the nervous owner, then forced him to concede that he'd carried on the canine in a bid to thwart the law. Long-term quarantine avoided by this simple sleight of Paul. He emphasized to everyone he wasn't barking mad, saying the mutt was a small gift for his alcoholic dad. To be parted from his doggy bag would drive him to despair. So he made sure he wasn't going to travel on Ryanair. When presented with the cost of the doggy in the suitcase, his chums might be forgiven for considering him a fruitcake. The dog's pedigree was faultless. He hadn't made a sound. But they collared him, so now he just might end up in the pond.
Thank you, Mary O'Connell. Next up to the mic, we have Dara Foley.
Hi, folks. My first time here, so be gentle. Just have a very short announcement. I'm the treasurer of the CIT Creative Writing Society.
UCC!
As you like. I'm looking for guest lecturers to give workshops or anything like that. If you have any interest at all, come talk to me about payment and everything like that. So, anyway. I've come unprepared and I have chosen a performance piece, unfortunately. So let's hope I'm up to it. Expectations. There is a countdown. Or is it power? Fluctuating, flexing cords of silence in the fabrics of anticipation. I draw blood in the pin drop atmosphere. Turning to stare at the voice from the mind, they wonder where the sanguine soliloquy was born. Seeking vicarious thought patterns, fine points finessed into transient communiques. Something to latch onto, something to take home, to love. Something to entrust as a first-hand idea to closest friends, or fragrant imagery to steal from the mind of the performer. Impose your thoughts upon my consciousness. Feed me nouns and verbs and structured skylines, fire and furnace tongs and tongues of icy wrath. Feed me gold and shining seas and pirate beards and locks for diamond keys. Feed me captioned idiocy to laugh at as I sit in gross appreciation. I who cannot find the time. Feed me bluebell summer meadows rolling in the softly sanded whitening surf while candles are snuffed. Feed me memories to hang my coat on. Let me think on fabled concerts, sunshine grass and splashing ball games, castles, math and forest walkways. Feed me rhythms from the soul and make them rhyme and structure them in time and mold and speak them loud. Inflect and shroud your meanings in a cloud of colored words, but not too fast and not too proud. And make them so that I can understand, but not too quickly, as it has to be allowed to soak. And take my hands and tie them to the mast, my sirens calling out at last, and I am proud to listen to the songbird, but the songbird only hums sometimes. And only feed the ones with color in their hearts and minds, and colors in their lives, and find divine appreciation for the ones who have the nerve to say the truth, and launch their phrases in a curve, and follow slipstreams to the end, and launch beyond to catch the next attempt, no matter how the laughter went. And always dream, and follow dreams and verses bursting at the seams. The last line is always the most important.
Well, thank you, Dara. Thank you. I think you'll have a big long queue of poets coming to lecture at CIT. Do you think so? Right. We've got Frankie Griffin in the house. Frankie.
I'm going to read one. Well, again, and it's on the top of your foot with anxiety. I'm eaten up inside, it's deep rooted. Stop me in my tracks, won't allow me be where I want to be. It takes me down, down deep. I resurface to a functioning mode, hide away in dark black places, reopening unhealed wounds. I've gone down every street, knocked on every door, looking for answers, repeating my story. So many times, I've stepped out of my mind, on many occasions, but I'm still here. I've weathered many storms. When your head is spinning, your heart is passing itself out, veins are rising, you're touching the flames of hell, burning up inside, like your first whiskey of the day, through every organ, right down to your toes. That's what I call a brainstorm. Believe me when I say it's a rough ride. I cry inside most days, then I rise back up to the top. No hiding your head in sand. You need to fight this thing. Head on, fist fight, wrestle, take it down, take that bastard out. Back right back, only louder. And we will rise again.
Go. Frankie. Next we have Michael Ray.
Portrait of a tripod at dusk. The door is letting in early evening air. Manfrotto stands in the conservatory, straddling the terrazzo. He has spent the day resting in the corner with the vine. His legs do not cast a shadow. Outside, birds are singing. Like a predator's beak, his pistol grip is always ready. He has no wings, but on his shoulders, a winding mechanism and rows of teeth are set into a long, dark neck. I can tell he's thinking. Thinking about sidling through the long grass, down to the bottom of the garden, where he can have a little word with those exuberant birds. Thinking, legs spread and hanging from his groin, some kind of vestigial stump, sleeved with a black rubber nub. Just the thought, and all goes quiet.
Good poetry in the house tonight. Helen Cavanagh-Rowan.
Okay.
Hi, I didn't bring any of my own tonight, but I'm going to read one by my aunt. Okay. Lament for Jack Doyle by May Boyce. The news has come, Jack Doyle is dead. The final bell has sounded. God called the roll, Jack's name was there, beloved holy grounder. Death beckoned him, like many a man on lonely London street. And Jack, once idol of this throng, alone, he's God in meat. He rose to fame, long years gone past. His youth was poor and hard, but Cove was proud to call him ours, the handsome Irish guard. The gorgeous Gale, the paper said, high banners told his story. He held the world within his palms, the cash, the power, the glory. But fame holds many dangers dark, the dames, the flesh, the drink. The star that soared into the sky began its slow descent. He never won a world crown. That victory went to others. Perhaps he brightened many a heart. He sang of Irish mothers. 2,000 years have rolled away. No room, they said to God. Jack Doyle, you're welcome home to Cove. We lift a damp green sod.
Thank you, Helen. I actually have a suit, and it's a Jack Doyle suit. God knows what the condition is. Next is our reigning fireboard champion, Sean Bent. Mr. Sean.
Hello. So I was here a few weeks ago, and I read a poem about going on to Plenty of Fish, the dating website, my experiences with that. This is kind of in the same vein, sort of a follow-on. Basically, this is about going through different dating apps and sites, Plenty of Fish, OkCupid, and then Tinder. Tinder, yeah, cool. Right, it's called Reflection in Nature. Only in my dreams do I see the woman, the one that never was, as she comes to be, as she's summoned from the sea, as she pauses, then walks on water to me, as I call her. Only in my dreams does the wind give name to one that time forgot, as she flies. A sun to fill my eyes, she pauses, then falls as dappled light on a morning. Only dreams, in a daze I see them wane, ones that grew, ensnared my brain, then sucked my mind like rain, then paused, to scream discolored pain of rot. The dreams fade, as only dreams do, once I've woke and the day is new. As I gather their shades of blue, I pause, to find an earthen tomb, and in they drop. I sit and play with sticks, they kindle, and I think of shapes in the flame, lips in the flicker, the smoke lingers, the smell sticks to my fingers, and whispers, smoulders, hints, the red shrinks, yellow speaks. Without pause, its kiss burns and taunts, painful pleasure, coldest heat, fool's hope, another dream.
Thank you, Sean. Next we have Josh Harley.
The UCC counted, actually. I didn't write this one myself, but because I'm an accountant and I'm fairly sure it's poetry. But I like it anyway. So, the gallows in my garden, people say, is new and neat and adequately tall. I tie the noose on in a knowing way, as one that knots his necktie for a ball. But just as the neighbours on the wall are drawing a long breath to shout, hooray, The strangest witness sees me, after all. I think I will not hang myself today. Tomorrow is the time I get my pay. My uncle's sword is hanging in the hall. I see a little coward, all pink and grey. Perhaps the rector's mother will not call. I fancy that I heard from Mrs. Gall that mushrooms can be cooked another way. I never read the works of Juvenal. I will not hang myself today.
Or any other day, has to be. Next up, we have Lucia Pascal. Lucia Pascal.
My mother and my mother's mother understood the process of fermentation, or the art of waiting for time. Time being a slow burn, a narrow flame, they set language aside in a jar, away in the dark, until oil and wick came to meet in a state of passing, the same way two and gather fly south in union for the winter. I, on the other hand, never knew how to swallow words that were meant to howl and rove in the moonshine, potent and ripe, a palpable rise and fall. I understand linguistics, the study of a current with an appetite for lonely drifters who know their capacity for drowning.
Thank you. Before I call the very, very final poet, is there anyone at all who hasn't read who would like to say a small poem? No? Okay. There are 17 people on the mic. Fantastic. Thank you all. Amen. Kieron McCartan is going to end the mic.
Smoldering potential. I didn't think that it would happen, that you'd come to look at me that way, or the sweetness of your breath could find such cruel things to say. Invest your heart and soul, and all there is to show is a little afterglow and a stale smoke on your own. Thanks a lot.